Hello, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 368, the first one that we're recording in a post The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom world, a game that, I don't know, maybe I'll be bold and say it might be the most fun I've ever had playing a Zelda game. Wow. By the way, I'm Neil Ronahan, and joining me, as always, is John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
Yeah, we are going to start off talking about listener or taking some listener mail and then talk about Zelda in, I guess, kind of light spoilers and then a little bit more spoilers. But
we'll like warn you as we get to each segment.
Yeah. Like it's first we're going to do like the little like talk about gameplay on the overworld and then start talking a little bit about some of the story stuff, but not like total end game, just some of the things that happen.
Well, to be clear, neither of us have finished it yet, so like we couldn't talk about the end game if we wanted to.
I have played an inappropriate amount of this game over the past several days, and I was talking to a friend about it, and he was like, "Did you beat it?" I'm like, "I am not even close, sir."
Yeah, I haven't even seen the progress bar for beating
it. Yeah, like I have I do have like 40 shrines. So that's
good. You just spoiled that there are at least 40 shrines, Neil. God damn it.
Yeah, but I'll be honest so far. Like, there are things that I don't like about this game, but by and large, I made that comment, I think it was on the Breath of the Wild podcast, where I was like, I am worried that Tears of the Kingdom is going to make Breath of the Wild feel redundant. And at least for me, I think that's the case. I, especially after that most recent replay of Breath of the Wild, not that it's bad, it's just that Tears of the Kingdom is so thoroughly the evolution of what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I think this game is just way more fun to like bomb around with. There's a lot more variety. The powers, I think, are cooler and more manipulative.
Yeah, and I we won't get too far into it yet, but I'm kind of just of the opinion that like, if, you know, 10 years from now, if I want to replay these, I kind of feel like I'll play them back to back. Like, Tears of the Kingdom to me feels so much like just like what it's just the next Breath of the Wild thing. Like, it more so than any other Zelda, it really does just feel like it's just more of that game. It also provides the ending that Breath of the Wild was sorely missing by like giving you some resolution to like what happened to Hyrule after that. Nothing good, but you know, it's something.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to talk about that right now.
Instead, we're going to talk about listener mail from you, the listener. You can email more questions about, I was going to say Breath of the Wild. You guys could email us about Breath of the Wild. Email us about Tears of the Kingdom or other Nintendo things, or in the case of these two emails, stuff not related to Nintendo. You can email that to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. So let's go to our old pal, Chariot Goblin, who says, "Hey, Connectivity, while this is a Nintendo podcast, I wanted to hear your thoughts on the interesting Phil Spencer interview regarding Xbox's first-party troubles. Phil discussed not trying to, quote, out-console Sony or Nintendo, and that great games will not be enough for Xbox to take market share. It was a surprisingly honest interview. However, do you think it was too honest? Do you see any similarities with his interview compared to Nintendo execs in the past, specifically GameCube and Wii U eras?"
So this is a great the interview, for some context, especially if
it's
you're
on
not
a kind of funny Xbox, what is it, the Xcast?
Yeah, it was on a kind of funny podcast. And it was an interview following the release of Redfall, which famously not being received well. Has been marketed this entire time as being this 60 frames per second Series X exclusive first party major AAA release. And it looks, and this, I'm not being facetious, it looks like a late era Xbox 360 game. It runs at 30 frames per second, is very buggy. It looks worse than most Switch games that you've played recently. Like, I played a good chunk of Redfall because I wanted something that I would have no trouble putting down for Zelda. and so I played a good chunk of this, and it's bizarre going from this Series X exclusive to Zelda and having Zelda just wipe the floor with it. Just even in terms of performance, like just just annihilates it. So Xbox has been deservedly getting some crap from that. I've seen some people point out that like it takes a lot for, you know, the most aggressive fans to kind of turn against the thing when it comes to like console war stuff. But we are seeing hardcore Xbox fans, like myself, honestly, just look at this and be like, this is just unacceptable. Like, this is what is this?
I wouldn't even, you definitely rewind to like 2 years ago, very pro Xbox podcast here. I think it's a little bit for me. I can't even totally fault the Series X because I think it's a pretty rad console, all things considered.
This is not a hardware fault.
And some of this is like, I'm not playing my Series X as much as just a little bit more of like how I've been playing games with children around and stuff. But I was so excited going into Series X. I was like, I'm gonna be there day one. Like, I haven't really been like, I had those moments of like, man, like I was there on launch for Xbox 360. I had a really good time with that as kind of like my main HD console for a while. I'm looking forward to doing that with Series X for 4K. This is going to be great. And I've played a lot of good games on Game Pass. I'm at a point where I should probably cancel my Game Pass subscription and just like pick it up when Starfield comes out. But they haven't had any freaking games. Like,
no,
it's not that there is a good lineup there, but it's a good lineup that is also on literally every other console and platform. Well, maybe not. It's not like everything's on Switch, but like most of the games on Series X, you can also get on PC. Most of them you can and also PS5. Get on PlayStation 5. Yeah. And like I sit here as someone that was like, I don't really see the need to get a PS5. I'm going to be set with my Series X. And I'm likely going to get a PS5 this year. Some of it is because Square Enix has me by the balls. I need to play Final Fantasy VII Remake 2. And the way that it's looking, it looks like Final Fantasy VII Remake is potentially never coming to Xbox. And I played through that game on my Steam Deck. And now I think I'd rather get a PS5 to play that than wait for it to come and play it on Steam Deck. Because while it worked fine, that game is not designed to be played on Steam Deck.
Well, Square Enix isn't exactly known for their PC ports, so
yeah. It's fine. It's an adequate port, but part of the joy of playing that game was like seeing it on a nice big TV. But it's also, I'm looking at like the Series X, and there's just not a lot outside of, I'm very curious about Starfield. There's probably going to be more games coming out on the horizon. It's just kind of blah, and it's a bummer because there's explainable reasons why Xbox is in the spot that they're in. They bought a lot of these companies right before a global pandemic. So you're onboarding them into your company, into your development workflow and everything. And you have the stuff where I think Phil Spencer even said in this interview with Redfall that it was a game that started development before Microsoft bought Bethesda.
Yes.
So you're not going to be able to like, if you have this ideal workflow and using the power of Microsoft to fuel games, Redfall is not going to totally get that benefit. Psychonauts 2, I mean, I still need to watch Psych Odyssey. I don't know if you had. Apparently, it is mandatory viewing. The documentary that came out of the development of Psychonauts 2, that's another game that was spanned when Microsoft bought Double Fine. So like you have those projects that aren't going to see the true benefit of being owned by a giant ass company like Microsoft. And then anything that got off the ground when Microsoft bought these companies got impacted by COVID.
Yeah.
And then they start to panic. Halo Infinite comes out, and Halo Infinite, not a bad game, but a disappointing game, a crappy launch.
A very good single player experience with way too little support for its multiplayer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that like that, cause did co-op is just gone, right?
Well, co-op is there, it's online only, there's no split screen co-op.
okay yeah, because they promised split screen co-op and then like that's just an L. Like, it is reasonable why you couldn't do that, but you said you were going to.
Yep. And that's, yeah, that there's been a consistent trend of over promising under delivering with them for the past few
Peter Molyneux, the company.
Yep. And some of it, you do feel bad because some of it is literally factors outside of their control. You know, nobody plans for a pandemic. But to this actual interview with Phil Spencer, like he did say with Redfall, essentially came out and said, yeah, that game was in development when we bought Bethesda. And we just sort of left them to do it. And we didn't get involved with helping them to optimize it until it was way too late. There were some questions of like, could you have delayed it? And he kind of dodged around that question, I felt.
They delayed it. They delayed it a lot already, and they had to have something come out.
I suspect that the decision to release Redfall was not entirely Phil Spencer. I suspect that was a board decision.
Yeah.
A bunch of executives got frustrated that nothing had come out on their system and it was looking bad. And so they put out the game that was the most ready. And it really, from what I've heard, both Redfall and Starfield were in a position where they probably could have come out, but you mess up Redfall, okay, you're gonna get some bad press. You mess up Starfield, your system's dead. So they sacrificed the lesser game so that they could keep Starfield on track, which is the right choice.
I'm looking forward to Starfield, but like really, if
Starfield
top,
there's so much weight on Starfield. Like if that doesn't land, you know, I'm sure Forza will be great. Forza is kind of a known quantity. That's safe.
It's not like Microsoft is putting out across the board bad games. I would say that they
Hi-Fi Rush was earlier this year and was great.
Yeah,
one of the top rated games of the year.
If you look at the kind of things that they're putting out that are popping, it is stuff like Hi-Fi Rush, which is inherently a niche game. It's stuff like Forza, which is I don't even want to call it a niche genre because it is a very big genre, but it's like a specific taste. It's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality of it is that, I mean, Nintendo has Zelda and even Pokemon. Yep. Sony has all of their third person action games, which, you know, it can be, I'll be a little derogatory about the fact that I think they put out very similar styled games, but they are doing that for a reason. It's because that stuff is very successful and sells.
It appeals to their audience. Yeah.
And Forza's fine. Like I haven't played the most recent one, but like I've messed around with Forza's over the years. They are good times.
Yeah.
But it's not, you're not going to get the kind of acclaim with a Forza as Sony's going to get with God of War Ragnarok or Nintendo's going to get with Heroes of the Kingdom.
Yeah. And Starfield is their game that has the potential to do that. And if it lands, great. I do have some concern in that you are releasing a game that has been in development for a very, very long time from a studio that has been making pretty similar games for like two decades now. And you're going to release it a few months after Tears of the Kingdom. And I'm a little concerned that it's going to have a Red Dead Redemption 2 issue where, not that Red Dead Redemption 2 did fine, but that same issue of it comes out and it feels old.
Will this be a reverse Skyward Sword? Where Skyward Sword came out and people were like, look at Skyrim, it's so much better than it. Is this going to be where Starfield's going to come out and be like, look at the Zelda game, it's so much better than this shitty Bethesda game?
Yeah. Yeah, and there is, it's also in the awkward spot of it. It now has a portion of, a large portion of the Skyrim audience who kind of want it to fail. There is a chunk of the Sony fan base that does not want Starfield to be good. So it's there's a lot riding on Starfield. As for was Phil too honest? I think Phil's very good at
I think he was too honest. I think he was way too honest in this interview. I appreciate it. I think it was very interesting. I think he crossed a line of being too honest that you don't really see execs of his nature ever cross.
I think that normally I would agree with you. I think in this situation, anything else would play poorly. I think it played well with the audience. to just come out and be like, yeah, no, we fucked up.
I did see some chatter out there of people being like he did go on the, he could have canceled this interview or something like that. I think this interview was very strategic. It happened what, 2-3 weeks ago. A Zelda game came out since then. We're still talking about it. I think it is strategic in that, but it's also like it's a degree of putting the focus on him eating shit as opposed to Arcane eating shit. And Arcane's still gonna eat some shit over this game. But it has definitely put like public perception and the PR battle of a lot more on, look at me, I'm Phil Spencer, I'm taking the heat. So there's also the part of the question from Jared Goblin about any similarities with this interview compared to Nintendo interviews during failed consoles. I do not think this is the Satoru Iwata pay cut moment, but I think it is an attempt at doing something like that where the head of the platform is trying to draw the pain onto himself as opposed to letting the entire company feel it.
It's certainly nothing Reggie would do.
Reggie would just like aggressively yell at fans and be
Reggie,
like, why would
Reggie
you want
would
Mother
say
3?
Everything's fine and
I wish I could give credit to the Twitter thread. It was just someone putting a couple tweets after Tears of the Kingdom came out, making the comment that Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom probably don't happen if Satoru Iwata doesn't take a pay cut when the Wii U was failing.
I think I saw that from a couple different people. I think I liked.
I retweeted it. So
I was going to say, I wonder if I can hunt it down.
But yeah, I really like that point because I think it's true, and it's not necessarily like, oh, Iwata did that and inspired the Zelda team, but like the Zelda, there was an interview on The Verge where I love it because it's the director of Tears of the Kingdom, Fujibayashi, talking about Ganondorf, and is basically just like, this designer at Nintendo has been working on Zelda games for like 20 years and has just wanted to make a hot, sexy Ganondorf, and we finally let him do it. Like a light paraphrase, but not really. Like, because it's just like, he's like, I gave that guy the directive to just make the Demon King look really, really cool. And he's like, and I just saw like a glint in his eye because he'd been wanting to make this attractive Ganondorf for a long time.
Well, it's been a while. I mean, that's something.
Well,
that...
it is, I forget the name of the artist, or like the designer, but they did the design of Ganondorf in Twilight Princess. And like that one was not hot Ganondorf,
but it's a great design.
It is a good design, but the Tears of the Kingdom is what if Ganondorf was super hot?
Yeah. That tweet, by the way, was from @notBruno again. They just said, I genuinely believe this game doesn't get made at this level of craft, if not for Satoru Iwata choosing to simply take a pay cut instead of laying people off after the Wii U bombed.
Yeah, because it's a thing that Nintendo does a good job of, where they don't I don't know if they've ever had a modern layoff.
Not a significant one, no.
Yeah. And you have that kind of retention, and some of that's also Japanese culture, but it's still, you have an environment where people don't necessarily want to leave. I mean, we'll see how it goes, because I believe like Japanese work culture is changing a little bit over the years, where people aren't as tied down to, I'm working with the same company that I came out of college and worked at. But Nintendo still has like a crazy high retention. And a lot of these teams have been working together for a long time. Or if they haven't been working together, you do things where Nintendo did this a lot in the past 10 years or so, where they'll take like two leads, I think one of the new Super Mario Brothers games was like, we took a guy who worked on Pikmin and a dude who worked on something else, and now they're making Mario Maker or something like that. Like, it's like kind of they do shift around stuff, but like the Zelda team in this case, it's the same people steering the ship that have been steering the ship for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's a lot of that same development staff has been working on this game for a while. It's not something that you see at a Ubisoft. who has had very high turnover, or a Bethesda even. Although Bethesda, I think, is a company that I don't think they bleed too much of their like senior level talent on like your Fallouts and your Skyrims.
Old Todd will be there until they go under.
A short king.
Indeed.
All right, let's go to the next question.
Sure.
Hey, Connect Fours. Here's a non-Zelda email to break up the monotony. Are y'all still using your Playdate? I'm pretty sure Neil has talked about it on the show a few times. Has the platform lived up to your expectations? I'm still kind of interested in getting one, since the crank looks like a novel gimmick, but I'm not sure what to expect. Do the games feel comparable in sophistication to DSiWare / early DS titles? Kind regards, Frankie Kong. I have a Playdate. I did check out some games on the that now they actually have a store there that I've messed around with a little bit. I don't have necessarily any specific game recommendations because it has been a while. I booted it up. I charged it up when the catalog store was added. I played there were one or two games that were free, and then I bought one that looked cool. There's been other waves of games that I really want to go check out. Like, some wild shit is being done on that system. I will say, if you were looking to get one, it's novelty. You're paying a lot of money for twee novelty. And for me, I don't really regret it. I'm definitely, it's not like I put hours upon hours into it, although there is like a very good 2D Zelda a tactics game on there is really good. There's some really good brain teasing puzzles. Pick Pack Pup is an incredible like match 3 puzzler that was legitimately one of my favorite games of 2022. And even the whatchamacallit. I remember the game that I bought on the catalog. It was Carve Jr. from Chuhai Labs. Sure. Which is not as good as their surfing game, which was one of the first ones to drop on Playdate. That surfing game is really good and like just twitchy arcade fun. The crank is super silly. But as far as comparing it, it does give me DSiWare vibes. Hardcore DSiWare vibes. That's part of the reason why I'm still on it. I'll likely boot it up at some point. I've been very busy with other video games and life. But it's there. It's actually right in front of me on my desk. Doesn't have charge in it, but it is near a charger and I can plug it in if I wanted to.
But he's choosing not to.
But yeah, if you are still curious and just write in another email and like demand I look at more of the catalog games, and I'll do that because I have been meaning to. It's just that I went from like replaying all these Zeldas for a game club to trying to mainline the Xenoblade 3 DLC before Tears of the Kingdom, and Tears of the Kingdom's out. Etrian Odyssey is coming out very soon. Super Mega Baseball 4. The world is conspiring me to not really sit down with the yellow crank thing. I'll probably get the pencil case stand or whatever when they actually like. I think it's like a clock too. I don't know. It's such a dumb thing, but they've just been very like earnest about like this is kind of a silly thing that we've made, and enough people are on board making cool shit for it that I think it's something that if this actually sticks around for a couple of years, we're gonna see it's like how you look at the Game Boy and you look at like initially it's like Alleyway and a Super Mario Land game that like looks like there's like two dots on the screen and that's supposed to be Mario, and then you look at like what Pokemon was, what some of those Wario Land games look like near the end. I think that's what we'll see on Playdate if it does have a life of a couple of years, which so far so good.
Yeah, I've said it before, but I am baffled that it is. I believe I'm on this show talking about how it'll never make it for a year. I am baffled that this thing is still around and doing fine. Good job, Playdate.
Yeah, I think the company also like was aware of how weird this was, and I think they've been pretty smart about messaging price, because I think it's the kind of thing where, because I think now they were also relatively honest that, like, because the price of parts to make it went up, they raised the price like $20. But they also gave people like a month's notice before they raised the price, so that's cool. But I think like $200 for this thing is a lot of money. I think I paid $180. That is a lot of money for a gimmicky novelty. But I think doing it like that is the reason why Panic is still making playdates and building an online store and stuff like that. There's also a crap ton of games on itch.io.
Yeah.
Like there's like really interesting visual novels there. Just like it's a lot of fun creativity. It's something that I just hesitate recommending because it is a lot of money, but it is very neat, and I'm glad stuff like this is being made.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's talk about Zelda.
Well, before we talk about Zelda, Neil, you know, something that I love about Zelda is that it has puzzles.
Oh, really?
In it, yeah. Much like who I believe is Connectivity's first ever podcast sponsor. Yeah, that's right. We're doing an ad read. So it's happening. Yeah, this episode is brought to you in part by Wongo Puzzles, which are handcrafted wooden puzzles that are very artisanal and satisfying. They are 100% wooden puzzles. They'll last forever. Each piece is hand-drawn, so no two pieces are the same, and you'll discover some fun, whimsy pieces as you work through it. And they come in a custom wooden box, which is perfect for storage and gifting. They've got a bunch of different puzzle designs, like an elephant and a turtle. Or technically, it's a tortoise. They've got a tortoise.
They have an owl. Remind you of Kapora Kapora from Legend of Zelda. Oh, there
you
go.
You can kind of do like a Zelda-themed puzzle purchase. Wouldn't that be great? So you could do that.
It's like the turtle from Turtle Rock.
They're extremely colorful. I actually really like, there's like a snow globe one that's kind of like a mosaic of like different landscapes and things. They're extremely intricate. These do not look like your regular like craft store puzzles. They're very pretty. So what are you waiting for? Go to wongopuzzles.com and pick out your puzzle today. And be sure to use the promo code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order. This is the most fun you've had with a puzzle, guaranteed, or your money back. Go to wongopuzzles.com and use the code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order and get puzzling right now. Anyway, puzzles, Zelda, away we go.
Yeah, so I have liked the puzzles in this game very much.
Yes.
Tears of the Kingdom, it's a good puzzling time. So I think how we're going to break this up, you know, spoilers if you don't want to hear anything about Tears of the Kingdom. See you next week. We'll probably still be talking about Zelda, but we'll probably do the structure where we talk about stuff that isn't Zelda and then go down the spoiler rabbit hole. But for this first part, we're going to talk pretty much about gameplay on the overworld without specific story things. We might reference some side quests and some of the structure of the game, but not going into any specifics of here's what's happening with the Rito in great detail.
Yeah,
we will talk
about all the layers of the overworld, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So first, people have been talking about the tutorial, the opening island, the sky island that you're on, where you got to do four shrines, just like the Great Plateau. And I think it's long, but I think it's very necessary, and I can understand why people might get frustrated. I have heard a lot of people kind of doing the shrines in a different order. Because basically the game guides you to go to the shrine where you get, was it Fusion first? Or no, Ultra Hand. Ultra Hand first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a donut. You just go around the donut.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultra Hand's the first one, and then after that, you can get Fuse or Ascend, but it's kind of like, the way that I looked at it is that the Fuse Shrine was the one that was easier to get to, I saw a lot of people that tried to go to the whatchamacallit, the
Ascend.
The Ascend one first, which
yeah
is icy and kind of a bitch to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go that way, it is then very hard to get to the other one. No fast travel is unlocked at this point. I can definitely see the issue with that, but I also think that taking this time to like understand the layers of the map, how to get around places, I think it's very important. Just messing around in the world, I do think we just have a natural inclination of wanting to get to the meat of the game quicker.
Yeah.
Which this is, I think back to when I first played the Great Plateau, took me a long freaking time to like
yeah.
get all the way up to that ice one. And now when I do it, I kind of have like, okay, no, this is the path that I take.
Yep. Yeah. And it's like these abilities are definitely, especially Fuse or not Ultra Hand. It's a much more complex ability. Like it looks like Magnesis, but it is so much more complicated.
It is baffling.
Yeah, and like I'm so I have a background in like 3D modeling and animation, and I occasionally get caught up on like the rotation and movement of these objects, and I feel like I'm someone who should be able to pick that up quicker. So I assume that for someone who maybe doesn't have that sort of experience, that it might take some folks a while to learn Ultra Hand. And and this Sky Island seems very geared toward like making sure they want you to know how to use everything by the time you get off that island. Not just understand that you have all of it, but know how to use it. Though they do still leave a lot of room for like how exactly you can combine all of those abilities together.
Yeah,
because you can really, you can do, especially with recall and ascend yeah. and Ultra Hand, you can just do anything.
I it's also like you can run into on that opening island. There's a thing, I believe it's called a flux construct.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on that opening island, I did not find that. I did find another flux construct, a harder iteration of it on the overworld recently. And the way, like, that was a boss that, like, the way that you can use all the different abilities is incredible. You can yeah. use Ultra Hand to just pick the blocks off. You can use Ascend to, like, jump up into its dumb head and start whacking the crap out of it. You can, I think I have actually, I haven't tried to like fuse anything to anything on its person, but I assume you might be able to do that too. It's wild. Even like the battle taluses out in the overworld, it took me mm-hmm. an embarrassingly long time to realize that I can just ascend through like the wooden plank around it. Now those things go down in seconds, as before I was using recall on their, when they would throw rocks at me
mm-hmm.
to throw them at them. And then I'd like shoot a fire arrow at the ground and use that to get in the air to land on the wooden plank. Like it's the ways that you can do that. Even the fusion in general, with arrows, like I don't need to worry about having fire arrows. They do a good job of if you are trying to stack up on like the fire fruit, it is very easy to do so.
Yes.
There are a lot of them.
And there are multiple things that have an effect, like I did a part where I needed water-based things, but I like, and so like the game suggested splash fruit because that was the fruit that naturally grew there, but I could also use like blue choo-choo jelly. Yep. There's pretty much always multiple versions of every item, so even if you run out of one specific thing, you can usually find an alternative that'll get the job done.
And there is part of me that wishes the game, like, especially when you're like in the middle of a battle, made it clear to be like, what does this do? But I also think that's kind of part of the magic is.
Yeah. Well, and they're usually you might named just be pretty like, obviously.
Yeah. But even, I mean, but like, there have you, I, you can, if you use like, I don't know if it works on every ice thing, but you can like make ice platforms. And then if you fuse that ice platform then you can throw out ice platform. It's like yes. some of that stuff is nonsense, and it has gotten me like And I feel like there's some of the descriptions in the menu will tell you like, oh, like the keys eyeballs, like this is homing, or the wings, that'll help the arrow go fly farther. Like it gives you some hint, or sometimes very directly, of what this can be used when it's fusion. You also do get the notification of like in the menu, it'll be like, oh, this will add +4 to attack. But you also like sometimes don't know what the design of the weapon's going to be. And sometimes those designs are cool. Sometimes they look like shit. But I think part of the fun is I got this item. What does it do? Or yes. I'm in a bind. Let's see what this thing does.
Yeah.
And like I have gotten to the point where I got some of the like I'll pick up crappy weapons and I'll just be like, all right, what am I going to experiment fusing this with? And so I feel like sometimes it's cool.
Every time I pick up something new, I've kind of just started like, I've never had this before, and just turn around and chuck it at a wall. Yep. And just see what it does.
Yeah.
And the game doesn't always tell you exactly what a thing's going to do. It also took me an embarrassingly long time to realize that I could just throw things and not attach them to my arrows, like when I'm using bright bloom seeds in the dark places.
Depths.
Yeah. Then I kept attaching them to arrows before finally realizing, like, oh, I could just throw them and not waste an arrow.
Have you? So for me, I have pretty much always had triple digit arrows very shortly after the start of the game. Meanwhile, Lauren has been like, I was like, oh, yeah, like the arrow economy is real better. And she's like, what the hell are you talking about? I've got like 10. Have you had a lot of arrows or no?
I think I'm on team Lauren. I go from like 150 arrows to like 30 real fast. I think I over rely on my bow. Maybe more than the game expects.
I did have a point where I literally only had one bow in my inventory.
Yeah.
Just because I burned through them all very quickly. Like I think I had a couple like hard fights. And yeah. I was pretty weak at that point as far as like one hit from the enemy at this point would probably kill me. So I would just like sit back and run away and fire off bomb arrows and stuff.
Yeah. Well, there was one point where I got particularly bad where I won't say what was happening because it is story related, but I was in an area where I needed to fuse a bunch of stuff with arrows. Oh boy, did I burn through like almost all of my arrows to the point where I wasn't sure what would happen if I actually used up all of them. And maybe I guess I would have had to just chuck stuff and hope for the best. But yeah, I use up a lot of arrows. Beetle is getting a lot of money from me.
Yeah, I have not bought arrows from Beetle once.
Really?
And I have pretty much always had triple digit arrows.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I.
Okay, so then maybe I stop.
Yeah, no, I've actually had a couple of times where I'm like, I'm just going to go to the stable real quick to buy arrows. Like, I don't need anything else in the stable. I'm just going to, Beetle's probably over there. I'm just going to go buy some arrows.
But in general, like, I think it's that these abilities, like, it's not like the runes in Breath of the Wild had battle implications. I think the bombs were just like a very, like, you've had bombs in Zelda games before. This is how they work. And you could use the other things, but I felt like it was a little more obtuse sometimes to like effectively use magnesis to do damage on stuff. Whereas this, it's all like very immediate as long as you remember you have it. Like recall for certain enemies is magic. Like having a Hinox throw a tree at me and then flipping to recall and then having it go back and hit him in his dumb face rules so hard.
I had a Horriblin throw a stake at me today, which was odd. Like I just saw him throw
like
something.
Meat?
Yes. He throws a thing and I instinctively just go to recall to go back. And so it kind of pauses the game. And I'm like, is that just raw meat?
And it was slaps him in the face
and I just
happened.
Recalled it and he just he got hit in the face with a slab of meat. So I do love
some of the AI and enemies is different in that like this did happen I think to some degree, but like I feel like it happens a lot more where like the boss Bokoblin or the Moblins will just throw shit at me, like whatever is near them they will throw.
Yeah, there was some of that in Breath of the Wild, but a lot of times like they would, if it was like a melee enemy, they could pick up tiny stones from the ground if you tried to climb away.
Yeah.
But it wasn't this degree of enemy runs around, sees just random thing on the ground, like a piece of meat, and goes, I'm gonna throw that at this guy.
Yeah, Arrokudas, like the flying things that hang out around moblins. Like, I've had times where they have thrown the explodey barrels on me. They've thrown enemies on me. Just like, I'm just walking and all of a sudden I just see like a bokoblin like drop in front of me, and I look up and it's just one of those damn dinosaur bats.
Yeah.
The variety of enemies has stuck out a lot. And at the end of the day, like, I think it's still like similar patterns. Have you run into any Lynels yet?
Yes, one.
I saw one and he just killed me almost instantly. Like one hit.
I ascended through something near one and just went back down.
Yeah.
So I didn't fight him.
I tried to fight a Gleok, and
how'd that go?
Not well.
Okay, yeah, I haven't been brave enough to try yet.
Yeah, I've noted the location of several of them.
Yep, I have four of them tagged on my map.
And the Gloom Hands are another
thing. I did finally run into them. Upsetting.
Did you see what happens after the Gloom Hands?
They just disappeared.
Oh.
So I live in perpetual fear.
Why does this only happen to me?
Like, I don't know. I've only seen them once.
So I have seen them twice. Once in the overworld, once in a cave. The cave, it seems like they live there forever. There is something that comes out after the Gloom Hands whenever I run into them that, if you have not seen, I do not want to say, because it was a delight. And then I will say I almost instantly died.
Good. Yeah, I've seen them once just in the overworld. I was on my way to Zoro's domain and they like popped out from behind some trees. And it was deeply unsettling.
Yeah,
I shot an arrow at one. It didn't seem to do much.
They are very the only time I've like defeated them has been I got to higher ground and they didn't climb up a wall.
Yeah.
And then I was.
Yeah, and I don't know
just,
why
like,
they
while.
Disappeared, but
yeah,
I wasn't complaining. I just made my way out of there.
Yeah, and I believe they are called Gloomhands. I've heard that somewhere. I do, as far as naming the tree, like the killer trees, they're called Evermeans.
Yes. Good name.
Yeah. Like, and like a really good enemy type, because it was like first experience fighting one, it was just like, what the hell?
I was riding through one of the only things that transfers in this game from Breath of the Wild is your horses. And so I was riding my Ganondorf horse, which I named Tingle, through a forest glade. Tingle does not have the best turn radius because he is a chonker. And those trees started coming to life and attacking me. And me and Tingle had a hard time getting out of there because that forest closed in real quick. Now we just avoid forests.
Yeah, I'm sad that my Ganondorf horse named Ganonhoof. He died with my save file.
Tragic.
Ganonhoof was a legend. I did get the skeletal horse again. That's always fun. I mean, you try to register and they're like, no, we can't. That is
I found one of those in the depths, which was super helpful.
Because
they can ride over gloom.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I marked where they spawned and was like, anytime we need to do anything remotely in that area, we're gonna go get one of those.
Yeah, the depths. So
let's talk
kudos
about
to
the
Nintendo.
Depths.
Kudos to Nintendo for teasing, but not explicitly saying that, like, so you have the sky, which the sky, I'm not going to lie, it's been giving me Skyward Sword vibes. Like, it seems like there's not that much to do, but it does seem like as you extend wider out, there's more to do.
Well, and yeah, I have done some cool there. What I'll say is, because you haven't done this yet, there's some cool story stuff in the sky. So that it feels like, interestingly, I haven't really encountered much story like required stuff in the depths, which is but, so yeah, I feel like the sky was almost sort of a a red herring for what they actually wanted to do in this game.
Yeah.
Because they, like, the depths are the size of Hyrule. Like,
yes,
the depths double the size of the map. And Nintendo was just happily sitting there being like, yeah, we're reusing the same map, but we added some Sky Islands,
yeah,
without really bringing up the, like, oh, also, we've doubled the landmass.
And, like, it is not like they're like, oh, it just looks like, no, like, it is vastly different. It is spooky as shit.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And awesome. And, like, anytime I find something down there,
it's thrilling. Like,
oh, my. Yeah. It's so, like, because you'll
even,
just.
Even, like, the dungeon whales or whatever they are.
I haven't seen, once again, haven't seen those yet.
I've seen somebody two
else,
of them.
Somebody else at work, somebody brought up something that wasn't that was down there. And I'm like, I haven't seen that yet, but that sounds horrifying. And then today I saw a boss from one of the dungeons just down there. And I was like, oh, I'm not going over there. Like,
so, oh shit. So is that the kind of thing that, like, probably after you beat a boss from a dungeon, they just spawn at the depths?
And he was nowhere near, like, underneath where I beat him. Like, is, he was across the map, and I was, yo, like, I was rules. Just like, I, like, saw something moving in the dark and was like, what is that? And I was like, why are you here? Like,
that is,
oh man,
that is awesome. The depths, I love that.
The depths are the reason that I have not rolled credits on this game yet, because, like, I've done a lot of the story, but I keep getting distracted and just spending hours.
Well,
just
that's
down
why,
there.
Like, I've been intending to get to just a dungeon
yeah,
for days now, and I keep on getting distracted. The latest distraction was I was on my way to Rito Village. I found a well that went into the depths, went down there, was like, okay, well, look, I could see another one of those, like the light routes. I'm going to go mm-hmm. over there. And then, like, an hour and a half later, I had explored an entire new region of the map that I had not even been to the overworld portion of yet, and wound up stumbling upon another dungeon that I had not gone to yet. And it was like, maybe it's time to turn back. It is that thing of just, like, taking what you thought you knew and turning it on its head. And it is, like, I still am at a point. Have you gotten the full overworld map?
I haven't been up into Elden. I haven't been up by Death Mountain and Akala yet, but I've got most of it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, my thing is that, like, I've spent a lot of time in this game. I have really kind of only started branching out beyond the center area. Like, I've been, like, Hyrule Field and south. I have, like, I've gone a little into Gerudo territory. I've, you know, working my way in Rito territory. I have barely been, like, I have not really been east of Kakariko. And it's so wild talking to some people about, like, going over to Tarrytown or Hateno, and just being like, I've been so fulfilled with this game, and there's shit I haven't even come close to approaching yet. Like, I haven't been to any of the dungeons, and I think at this point I do not know the exact amount of time that I put into this game, but I am probably at 25-30 hours.
Like, there's some sort of weird psychological effect of putting it in the same overworld you've been to before, where, like, when I played Breath of the Wild, I was like, I have to find out what's over there, right?
Yeah.
But now, like, yes, I enjoy revisiting a place, but, like, I find myself more happy to wander a bit. Like, I'm not as compelled to be like, I have to get everywhere on the map, because I've, like, I know it. And so I'm more interested is if I'm like, okay, I want to go to the Zonai Ruins, because that seems like there might be some stuff there, like, as opposed to I need to clear out this entire map. And it's a very weird experience, because I can't really think of another game that has done this, where I have the same map, but there's more of it now.
And it's also like, it's the same map, but it's like, how have, like,
but it's different.
Yeah, like Kakariko feels entirely different because, I mean, they had a bunch of shit fell on there, but like, it just recontextualizes how these familiar areas, and I'll have moments where I'll be like going to the Great Plateau, like thrilling. Like, it's okay. So weird seeing that.
Did you go to the King's hut on the Great Plateau?
Yes. And it's been taken over by the Yiga clan.
I
have you been below the Great Plateau in the depths?
Yes. What I was going to say about the hut is that I don't think I've ever been more like viscerally angry at imaginary characters in a video game for besmirching the good name of another imaginary character in a video game. Like, I got to that hut and was like, the Yiga are here. Those bastards. Like, we got to kill them.
Like, I also love that, like, the Yiga, like, got forced into the depths at the events of Breath of the Wild.
It makes sense because that's where you throw Koga.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
so good.
Like, somebody saw that cutscene and was like, what if we made, like, an entire map out of this?
Or they're, like, trying to, they're, like, planning, like, okay, where's everybody going to be? It's like, well, Koga's easy.
Yeah, we know where he was last time we saw him.
And that does, like, probably just looking at the time, we'll start talking a little bit about story spoilers, but
sure.
So, like, I guess heads up after this bit, we'll give another warning, but story spoilers coming up. I love how the quest lines work in this game. I feel like in Breath of the Wild, you really just had like one driving quest line. There were like offshoots of it, like the memories was something that was optional, but for the most part, it was like, go do the Divine Beast, go beat Ganon. Mm-hmm. In this one, like, you have what's going on with, I won't say it, we're not doing story spoilers yet, but there's, you know, what's going on in the world, and it's like, okay, you can go to the, you know, the different, like the different race towns, or you can go see what Impa's doing over here. You can go in the depths. There's a quest line there. And then like when you go to the depths, like you can find the Yiga. There's a quest line for the Yiga. Like there's all these other things, and even just the way the game differentiates between main quest and like side adventures and side quests. Like the side adventures are like way, way deeper. Like they are more connected, and it is stuff like just seeing familiar people.
Almost like
people
they didn't add the side quests in the last 6 months for this one.
Yeah, it feels like it's a lot more thought out as far as all how this is all connected, and I think it works better for this game because you can play it in whatever way you want, more so than Breath of the Wild. Like Breath of the Wild does have the neat trick of like just go fight Ganon right now, and I have not done it. But I noticed that, okay, here's how I can go to the end boss here as soon as I want to. But the game doesn't guide you there as directly.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk story stuff.
And okay.
Here's one thing. I don't know if you have seen it. Don't tell me. How wild would it be if you're just walking around and a guardian just showed up?
That's the final boss. Ganondorf reaches up his weirdly robotic arm and takes off the mask, and it's a guardian.
Yeah, gotcha. You just hear that sound.
The pianos start.
All right, so story spoilers: 3, 2, 1. This game starts out with a bang.
Can you imagine if Breath of the Wild ended with them like going down into that crypt and being like, oh shit, Ganondorf, cut to black? Like,
yeah,
this like the opening and then a little bit after the tutorial of getting to the fort that I just said the name, Lookout Landing. I felt so much resolution for Breath of the Wild in the first few minutes
game. You got to see them rebuilding Castle Town.
Yep.
And just rebuilding the world. Like it's even something as much as like Bolson like having all his parts everywhere about like rebuild the world.
Yeah.
But like I guess as far as the story goes, I like Ganondorf a lot in this game from what we've seen.
I guess portrayal. Yeah,
it is. If you've reached the memory portion of this game at all, then you would know. If you have not, leave. But it was also pretty obvious to me as you go through that intro area where Zelda disappears after all the stuff goes with zombie Ganondorf coming back to Link having his arm corrupted, and then he gets the arm of Rauru, the Zonai King of Hyrule,
Who got greenwashed, which is not okay. We need to stop doing that to old white men.
But with Zelda in the Temple of Time in the Sky Islands of the tutorial, she gives you the ability of recall, and then
it's
two,
not subtle.
Yeah, when she shows up, the recall noise happens. She went back in time, and we find out that the memories of this game are her going back to the time of Rauru, which is Rauru and King Rauru and Queen Sonya. Sonya, a name I don't think we've seen in a Zelda game before.
Nope.
Right. They are the first king and queen of Hyrule. So
the first king and queen of Hyrule, and they're around at the same time as Ganondorf. We're gonna have to rework the timeline a little bit,
I guess. Well, yeah, because if we think about from a timeline perspective, it's Skyward Sword is Hyrule is not
right. We're post Skyward Sword. We're good there. Like, we made it past Skyward Sword.
Yeah. And then I guess Hyrule is founded. Like, this is the kind of thing where it feels like it's almost retelling Ocarina.
So, okay, I've saved this because I didn't want to say it before the show. These flashbacks are to your Ocarina of Time remake, where they've completely, like, I had that thought watching these where I'm like, this is like Ocarina of Time, but it's clearly not. But it's telling that kind of
because it is using time where it's just presented in a different way. My thought after Link has his corrupted arm and wakes up after that opening cutscene, I thought it was going to be like it's actually been a 15 year time skip. That was my thought, and then you get down the lookout landing and you talk to people and you'd be like, oh, it's been like a couple days.
But it's
weird because I'm very compelled to find out what happens in the story, but I think after 6 years of build up with stuff with the Zonai, from a like at least a lore perspective in this moment, it could change as I find out more of what they're laying down. I'm kind of disappointed. This game is not totally about the story for me. Like, the gameplay is the most fun I think I've had in a Zelda game. It's incredible. The story I'm compelled to find out, but like, I think Rauru is a putz. He messed up a lot. I think Ganondorf's portrayal is awesome. Like, I don't really get Zelda right now. It's all very confusing.
With Zelda, I'm not really a fan of Breath of the Wild Zelda, just her character. So I remain not really a fan of her. She seems perpetually confused and weepy and she doesn't strike me like the game wants me to think that she's very strong and like strong willed. And then you listen to her and you're like, well, she clearly isn't.
And like I feel like for me in Breath of the Wild, it worked for, like, I agree with you that like she's a little bit whiny, but like I think that's a little intentional,
or at least it makes sense in the flashbacks of Breath of the Wild because she's a kid. But then she holds off canon for 100 years.
Yeah, like, and then like kind of like succeeds. Like, that's her arc in Breath of the Wild, is realizing that she had the power in her all along, and she awakens it. And then in Tears of the Kingdom, especially when she goes back in time, it just feels like she's an idiot.
Yeah. Which is true of everyone who's in that time period, except for Ganondorf. So it's kind of clear why he fares so well.
Yeah. Like, I, it's, And the, I think that's like the frustrating thing with it is that I like the setup for it, and I've not seen every memory yet. I've had half of the ones that you collect at this point. I think maybe more. I don't know.
If we combine all of the memories we collected, we might have all of them.
Yeah.
Because I think we each have about half, and I know that we each have ones the other doesn't.
Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where, like, like this story part of it, I'm a little bummed out about. Although the stuff with the sages that I assume are tied to the dungeons more, I like a lot of that setup. I do like the way the mystery is teased out through different quest lines. You have the stuff with Impa, you have the main quest, you have like the stuff with the ring runes or the ring ruins in Kakariko. I assume there's probably things in Akala and Hateno that also kind of go in that line as well. I like the way lore is presented. I don't know if I like the story.
I think my main issue with the story is I think the story itself is compelling. I won't lie. I'm disappointed that we're not getting to see the imprisoning war as it has been presented to us. Like that opening cutscene of Zelda going, "Oh, it's the imprisoning war." You going, "Cool. I remember this from Link to the Past. That will be cool to see." And then them saying, "Well, we're not really going to do it like that." All right, like it's fine, that's neat, but like we didn't need to call it that then. But okay. My main issue with the story, honestly, is just its subservience to the Breath of the Wild story structure of we're not going to give you actual story while you're playing the game. You're going to pick up these memories and see a story that already happened. Because that's what we did in Breath of the Wild. It sold really well. We're going to do it again. And even the initial, like, you know, you get your main quest line and it's, "Oh, we've detected these 4 points of interest on your map." And you, those points pop up and you go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
So Rito, Gerudo, Zora, got it. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Same places. Cool.
It's a shame because I do like the memory structure as in the memory stuff. Like there's the first one that I guess technically you can probably find them in any order. But it's the geoglyphs that are on the overworld. You have to find the one that is a puddle of water. And then you view a memory. You're kind of directed. You'll see the first one in the line, which confirms that Zelda went back in time. I think the next one that I went to is like one of the last ones. So it was just like, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, and I really like the way that this game works. I love how you see things out of order and then like kind of piece it together. Like, I love that aspect of it. And I think just it worked very well, like thematically with Breath of the Wild. I think it works pretty well thematically with Tears of the Kingdom so far. I do agree with you that it does seem like they just like, all right, we're, you know, adding breadth and depth to this, but it is still the same bones.
Which I don't hate it.
They
improved like every other element of the game. So
yeah,
it's hard for me to sit here, but like, I don't know when I'll feel qualified to write a review of this game. Right now it's just when I roll credits, because like I'm not, there's so much, like how do you even review this? But I will say that like that is the part of it where I'm like, okay, this isn't a 10 for me. Like I'm not gonna give this a 10. Because I do think it's subservient to Breath of the Wild in a way I wasn't expecting, which I think the way people would expect is the fact that it uses the same overworld map to some extent. That part's fine. It's just that it feels like we're going through the same motions of you need to go to these places, you're going to collect these memories along the way. Oh, it's out of order. Like, and it's fine. And I do think they knew what they were doing from a lore standpoint of going imprisoning war, because you know that you're mentioning a well-known off-screen event and everybody goes, "Oh," and then you go, "But not really." And you go, "All right, like it's still cool, but like, why did we call it the imprisoning war when the timeline doesn't make sense if you're calling that the imprisoning war alongside the first king of Hyrule, who I guess we never saw in Ocarina of Time. Maybe he was green. but like things don't quite like we're clearly reimagining Ocarina of Time in those flashbacks.
Although I guess, I mean, it feels like it's a, it's some interpretation. There's now another offshoot. It's it's the one where the first Queen of Hyrule doesn't fuck a goat.
Yes. I feel like the next Hyrule Historia timeline will essentially just have the Fallen Hero timeline like split off completely. Like it will not be an offshoot of Ocarina of Time. It will just be an alternate timeline. Honestly,
it works.
Makes the Fallen Hero timeline way easier to explain. So like that's fine. But it is like if you're going to reference a thing from the lore and then kind of just not totally deliver on it, like I am admittedly a little disappointed by that, and I don't think it's too ridiculous. Like I know you shouldn't expect
get where you're coming from. It is funny. As someone who gave Breath of the Wild a 9.5, I think I'm like 25-30 hours into the game, a lot of ball game left. I would give it a 10 in this moment.
You're welcome to review it, by the way. I would love to not have to at any point. You just step right in.
If you cut a video, then maybe. But
we just want to we'll tell you what, 9.75. So we can get a nice little 75 in there. And we'll call it a day.
This is like the first Zelda game I haven't played with a deadline in mind since like I was 20 years old. I realized I'm like Twilight Princess was the last time that I played a Zelda game without a deadline in mind for a review. It's been a very long time. And I think a lot of the mystery with the Zoni, which was so fascinating, is at least at this point pretty disappointing. There's only two. And I still don't even fully understand the whole like they came from the sky and slept with our women. Like,
well, and then they came from the sky, but they're clearly all their shit was on the ground. Like,
yeah.
And like they're obviously more than maybe I just haven't got there yet. Like,
yeah. Maybe there is more explanation to it.
That's a whole lot of civilization for two people. And a good chunk of it was certainly on the ground for sky people. Did it predate them? Like,
The thing that is, I think there is a line in one of the memories, maybe it's one you haven't seen yet, where I think something is said about how like all your other people left to Rauru. Like I think Ganondorf says that. Something along those lines. So like it's kind of implied that like there were more Zoni and they all peaced out. Maybe there is more to come with that. I would imagine.
I don't want to judge that too harshly when I haven't seen.
But it is so far. Like I like the Zoni robots. I think their shtick is fun. I liked talking to the constructs when I was in the tutorial area. But the Zoni as a people has been disappointing. Also, just because like Rauru is just taking infinite L's in the memories.
And I mean to some extent. Yeah, I wasn't expecting Rauru to fare too well because the one thing they are consistent with the Fallen Hero timeline is that like shit didn't go well.
Yep.
So like that part's
well,
fine.
It's more like it would be cool if like Ganondorf actually tricked him and Rauru wasn't just like, he's evil, but he seems like he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a man.
Rauru's just got a soft spot for green people. It's racial prejudice is what it is.
But in general, I love this game, and I feel like we didn't even talk that much about how you can make the stupidest, most ridiculous things with like the Zoni devices and Ultra Hand. I've just been getting better at making things that actually get off the ground. Also, the trick of if you have a plane that like has the whatchamacallit, like the fans on it. You lift it in the air, put it down, press recall on it, then trigger and then go off. Because for a while it was like, okay, how do I get this to move? And then it was just like that aha moment. And I beat a shrine by shield surfing on rails.
Good.
I
did you sing Superman to yourself while you did it?
I don't know if you saw the clip that I put up. I did put up a clip on Twitter of me. It's like the lamest, like non-aggressive or non-extreme sports way, because it is just like it's. I don't know if you've even seen the shrine. I think it's in like Farron area. But it's one where they want you to make a device that fans blow on it and it goes over these rails. I used that to get me to a point, and then I jumped off and then shield surfed to victory. I tried to like shield surf the whole way, but because you're going up, like the timing just became finicky. And then I realized, I'm like, okay, if I use this to get to this point, I can hop off, because there is a little bit of like magnetism when you shield surf near a rail, like you stick to it a little bit. It's
something
really
that
cool.
Sonic the Hedgehog should employ, by the way.
I hope there's more opportunity for that, because I think or maybe it's, we just need to have enough videos so the next Zelda game, much like they kind of built some of the ideas of Tears of the Kingdom by looking to see what people were doing, if we all do enough shield surfing on rails, maybe they will just make a Tony Hawk game with Zelda in it. That would, it'll be the Legend of Zelda, like, I don't know, like skateboard of time.
Sure, they can do whatever this time. I have no idea what's happening in this timeline, so like, yeah, somebody, a goat dinosaur slept with Tony Hawk, and now there's a magical skateboard Triforce power. That's how it goes.
Well, I think that's where we'll leave it at this inaugural.
Yeah, I need you to go play a dungeon before next week, because I have thoughts, but I need you to have played at least one so that I can talk to you about one.
yeah, and we'll send in listener mail about, well, you know, maybe hold off on the Tears of the Kingdom stuff unless it's broad, because I don't want people being like, this is what happens at the ending.
If you want to talk about gameplay,
yeah,
much like we did prior to the story spoilers, go for it.
Yeah, and we'll inevitably do some kind of like spoiler cast, maybe even just a lore focus thing at some point. But
yeah,
for now, I want to end this episode so I can go play where I pass out and go to bed, or maybe go to bed, because I've been staying up too freaking late playing this game the past couple days. It's very good. All right, send us listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Thank you, John. Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.